Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Crowdfunding. Well, that's probably a new term for you. It's certainly a new term for me. It's an investment opportunity, but is it something that you should be investing in? What are the risks? What do you need to know before you get yourself involved in crowdfunding? Well, we're going to find out. My guest is Owen Donnelly. He's the chief counsel for the Office of Education and Advocacy for the Securities and Exchange Commission. Owen, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back.
Now, this is a very interesting subject and one of which I know absolutely nothing. So let's do a little bit of consumer education here. What is crowdfunding?
Well, generally speaking, crowdfunding is a way of raising money through relatively small individual investments from a large number of people. Over the last couple of years, there's been crowdfunding in spaces such as charitable donations or even to fund artistic endeavors like movies or music. This is quite different. The crowdfunding for investors is an equity investment that is an ownership stake in small companies. The background is essentially that Congress passed a law called the Jobs Act, you may have heard of, and among the provisions of the statute were that the SEC should make rules in the crowdfunding space. And so the commission has made those rules, and effective this May 16th to be exact, companies will be allowed to use crowdfunding to offer and sell securities to the investing public.
Now, who's likely to be doing this?
It's a really good question. So most of the companies, the maximum amount that can be raised really is about $1 million. So these are going to be small companies, and they're almost all going to be startup companies. And that's going to be very important as your listeners consider whether or not any of these investments might be appropriate for them. They need to understand, first and foremost, that startups are inherently speculative. So there may be some risks they need to be aware of.
Well, yes. It sounds rather extraordinary. Okay, let's talk about it. So this is something where if I wanted to start a small business, I could just go out and say to people, I'd like for you to invest in my business, and if I can convince them to do it, they can do it. Or how would one proceed, and how would you know about these offerings?
Right. So the rules do have some pretty strict limitations on how the money can be raised. One of the most important limitations is that the company must go through something called a broker-dealer, which you've probably heard of, mm-hmm. or through a funding portal, which will be similarly licensed and registered like a broker-dealer. That funding portal or broker-dealer, which we refer to generally as intermediaries, will be sort of in charge of gathering the money that comes from investors and also providing investors with the information they need to make the decisions. So an issuer can't come right to you and say, invest in this. They need to work through a registered broker-dealer or a registered funding portal.
Okay, but that still doesn't guarantee you won't lose money.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There are a couple limits that are important. One, there is a limit on how much money an individual investor can invest. There's a formulation, and I'll go through it now, but I'd strongly recommend anyone considering making a crowdfunding investment to go to our website, investor.gov, where you can see at a high level of detail exactly how much you're able to invest. But essentially, if your annual income or net worth is less than $100,000, you can invest the greater of $2,000 or 5% of either your annual income or net worth, whichever's less.
So this is really exposing the risk somewhat for consumers, that you don't just go in and put all your money into something because you've fallen in love with the idea.
That's exactly right. There are strict dollar limits on how much someone may invest on an annual basis. But putting aside those protections, and they are real protections, I think one of the most important things to keep in mind for investors are these two factors. One, that early stage ventures are very speculative and they often fail. The second issue, which is I think equally as important, is the lack of liquidity. That is, it may be difficult or take time to get your money out of the investment. In fact, the rules require that you may not sell or transfer your shares to anyone else for an entire year. Now, there are some exceptions for transferring to family, but you should understand, if you invest in this, you may not be able to get out quickly.
Okay, now, going back, tell me, basically, who started this? I mean, this was a movement, you said people investing in the arts and things like that, but that's different from investing in a business.
It certainly is. The genesis of all of this really is with Congress, and it is that small business wanted an easier way to raise money. And one of the jobs of the Securities and Exchange Commission is to help, and the legalese term is to facilitate capital formation. And generally speaking, that means to make it easier for businesses to raise money. Now, there are a number of ways under the federal securities laws that companies can raise money, but they require a great deal of disclosure, registration statements, quarterly filings, and those types of money-raising ways are really more established for larger companies. This is designed for very small companies, and that's what's new. That's what's new about this, is that it is enabling small startup businesses to raise money from a broad swath of people. In the past, they'd raise money from either through like a large investor or maybe a local bank, but this is different. This is going to let everyday people invest relatively small amounts of money in companies, very much akin to they would with a large company.
Okay, so let's say I'm starting a small business and I want to utilize this process. So I have to go to a registered broker or a portal, as you refer to them, to do this.
That's exactly right. And the portal.
So I'd have to get myself certified that I'm doing a legitimate business and I have a business plan and all of that sort of stuff.
That's right. And there's some disclosure that the issuer, that is the company who's raising the money, must go through. But I would be very clear. One, the portals or the brokers aren't guaranteeing that the businesses are going to be successful.
No.
And they're not weighing in on the whether it's a good investment or a bad investment. They're making sure of a number of things. One is that the company has put out the disclosure that it's required, and that does include some financial information. But mostly it's what they're going to do with the money.
Okay.
They need to describe, and these documents will be available with the crowdfunding portal, so investors will see them. In addition, the crowdfunding portal has a couple requirements that go farther than just making sure that the company tells its story accurately, or tells its story, period. They also must ensure that the investor, one, looks at educational materials, two, affirms and actually positively states that they understand they could lose all their money, and three, will have to demonstrate that they understand the risks of crowdfunding. So this is very different than investing in the stock market in that there are some affirmative educational requirements that investors will need to go through in order to invest.
Well, this is such a new thing that I would think that people really need to do a little bit of educating. And yes, your website, investor.gov, there's an excellent bulletin that you all have put together, Owen, that I think would be very useful for people if you're just interested or if you want to know more about it, or if you're a business and thinking about maybe this is the way you should go to raise capital. Okay, now let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Owen Donnelly. He's the chief counsel of the Office of Education and Advocacy with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, the Securities Exchange Commission was brought into this because, of course, that's what you do, is oversee what's going on in the investment world. So this new thing, do you anticipate that there's going to be a lot of people utilizing this, Owen, or is that asking your crystal ball to perform too far in advance?
So it's a great question, and just being very candid, I don't know that I have an expectation. It is very possible that many folks will be interested in getting in the ground floor of a small business, but I'm just not sure. I think there are certainly companies, big broker-dealers and others that are moving to this space to set up crowdfunding portals, and there will be an infrastructure in place by May 16th. I'd be wary to make any strong guess, but I think folks are going to use this, and we'll have to learn from their experience. But this is something that's going to be around, and it's going to be around pretty quickly.
And there are a lot of restrictions on it. I like the fact that you can't just put everything you've got into this because your friend's starting a business.
right.
And that there is oversight over what the companies are doing. But as you said, there's a very high fail rate of businesses. And I guess this would be one of the factors that people should really consider. Can they afford the risk? Because this sounds to me like this could be very risky.
I think that's right. I mean, while it's possible an established company would use crowdfunding, a more established company probably wouldn't need to. So just by its nature, you're going to see a lot of new businesses. And this is certainly not to say that new businesses can't succeed. They just likely will not have a track record. They will not have a long track record that you can make a decision based on. You'll have to make a decision based on what this company represents it's going to do. Mm-hmm. And that by nature, may be just inherently too risky for many investors. On the other hand, and especially given that you can invest a relatively small amount, you might think the idea makes a lot of sense. You do your due diligence. Surely, one other interesting part of crowdfunding is the general idea behind crowdfunding is that a whole bunch of people getting together discussing an idea will come up with sort of the best information that it'll percolate up. And to that end, the rules require that the funding portals have essentially a chat room where investors and the company can discuss the investment in a transparent way.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. So you can go to the funding portal. And online, there'll be a discussion of the investment. And what's especially interesting about these chat rooms is that the folks who work for the company or the issuers must disclose that's who they are. So if the company can't go on and say, oh, this looks like a great buy, without saying, we're the company.
Okay.
So the idea is that you'll get a robust, transparent discussion of the pros and cons, and that the funds will essentially go to the ones that make the best argument that they'll succeed.
I see. So there are a lot of built-in safeguards here. But I guess the thing for everybody is to calculate how much you can risk, and of course you're limited how much you can invest. But also keeping in mind this is an investment where you can't get your money out right away. Maybe a little bit difficult to get it back, and so there's a lot of restrictions on it. Well, listen, I'd like to move on to discussing, and it's probably in a lot of people's minds, having recently seen the documentary on Madoff. Which I loved Richard Dreyfuss in the role. I thought he was magnificent. Didn't love the man, but I loved the actor. You know, we think of Ponzi schemes. Oh, that's old hat. Well, this was not old hat. This was a very smart person who took an awful lot of investors for, I guess, literally millions and billions of dollars. What do you see in Ponzi schemes? I mean, I know there have been a number of cases brought against companies that are really a Ponzi scheme. How do you tell if it's, for example, there are multi-level marketing programs? How do you tell, Owen, whether it's a Ponzi scheme or what?
Well, this is a very good question, and you're absolutely right. Every year, the SEC and the state regulators bring cases against Ponzi scheme operators and pyramid scheme operators. We actually have issued alerts and bulletins describing both pyramid schemes and ways to tell a legitimate multi-level marketing company from something that might be more suspicious. There are a couple red flags that we'll point out. First is with any guarantee of return. Anytime someone says, you invest in this and you're guaranteed to get some money back, you're guaranteed to make a large profit, that is exceptionally, that is about as high a red flag as you're going to see. And many of the cases that we do bring and that the states bring do involve these guaranteed high rates of return in a short time period. The second factor that really is quite useful, especially if you're talking multi-level marketing, is when there's not really a product, when folks are really just getting paid to bring more people in, but the company itself isn't selling anything, that can be very suspicious. On the pyramid scheme front, it's a little harder because often you're talking about investing and there isn't really an underlying business. The red flags, of course, include a high guaranteed rate of return. A second precaution that folks should take is to make sure the person selling the investment is licensed. We see many, many cases of Ponzi schemes and pyramid schemes where the person selling the investment was not properly licensed. And so we strongly recommend that retail investors consider and always do a background check of who they're working with. That's a good first screen.
Yeah. Well, the Ponzi scheme, I guess the beauty of it is that the early investors are paid off because they're using the money from newer investors. The older investors get their money, and there's a money flow coming in. It makes them think it's legitimate.
That's exactly right. And sometimes what we'll see is what I call true believers. It's some of these folks who got their money who went in early and got money out early and made a great return, and they tell their friends, oh, yes, I did make 30% in this two-month period. Unfortunately, one, that really doesn't go to whether or not it's a fraud. As you know, all Ponzi schemes must, by the nature of math, eventually collapse. But second, what is true also is that even the folks that get in quickly and get out quickly with a profit, more and more we are able to, through a receiver, through a court, get money back from those folks too. So even if you get in...
Oh, so the early investors may not be sitting as pretty as they think.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It doesn't necessarily require that they did anything wrong, but as a matter of equity, if they have benefited from essentially a wrongdoing, we will at times ask a court or in a different manner, try to get money back for the harmed investors in a more equitable fashion. So I would, anyone who's thinking, well, this may be a Ponzi scheme, but I'll get in and out quickly, they should think twice.
Thank you. And three times and four times.
Definitely.
All of that. Yeah. Well, but it does bring it to mind because, I mean, I've been in the consumer world for a long time, and I know they have been around for a long, long time. As a matter of fact, I think the original Ponzi was in the early 1900s, wasn't he?
That's exactly right, Charles. But yes, these schemes have gone on. They're really only – I worked in our Office of General Counsel for a number of years looking at enforcement cases. And one of the things that you learn is there really are only a couple different types of cases, and they've been going on since the invention of markets. And the Ponzi scheme is one of them.
Okay, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker, and joining me by phone is Owen Donnelly, who is the Chief Counsel with the Office of Education and Advocacy for the Securities and Exchange Commission. The Ponzi scheme, it lures you in, you get money, and oh boy. Well, anyway, so what are some of the other, are there some new scams out there on the investment front that we should warn our listeners about, Owen?
There are, Shirley. I know we've talked in the past about social media, but it certainly bears repeating. We continue to see cases where their fraudsters are reaching out via Facebook, via LinkedIn, and Twitter. And one of the reasons that they're doing so is because, you know, investors and potential victims put so much information out in these spaces, and they don't guard their privacy settings. So the fraudster can know a lot of information. For example, if someone's on Facebook, and I'm on Facebook, and I share pictures of my family, but I have high privacy settings that only my friends can see these things. If you don't set those privacy settings at a pretty conservative way, then anyone can see what you post. And what that means is that a criminal might know where you live. They might know how many children you have. They may know when you retired, where you vacation. And that gives them leverage.
When you vacation.
And that's, I know a number of years ago when some of the location tracking social media sites where you could check in, I'm here. I know, I think this is in New York City, that people were getting robbed. Like, hey, I'm at this restaurant, and that would let folks know that they weren't in their house. It's just a way of saying that criminals and fraudsters will use technology in any way possible. Given how big and fast social media is moving, social media has some wonderful aspects for investors, but being careful with your privacy settings. And also, you know, unfortunately, some people, you've seen email scams and tricks like this. Some people will give out account numbers and bank accounts and driver's license information on social media and unsecured electronic delivery.
Oh boy, that's not a good idea.
That's not a good idea. We strongly caution people to be exceptionally wary about ever putting personal information, especially account information, via anything other than a secured site.
Well, are you seeing a lot of investment fraud opportunities, and I put that in quotes, being offered from companies that are not even in the United States?
Absolutely. In fact, I mean, I don't know that there's hard data on this, but many of the market manipulations, there's a scam called a pump and dump where the criminals put out all this false but good information about a penny stock or a company that's very, very small. And if enough people start buying it up, they just keep selling, and then they dump. So they pump up the stock with fake good information, and when the price goes up, they dump it. And many of those are offshore boiler rooms, we call them. There are some domestically, but right. And one of the problems with them being offshore is that they're hard to catch and very hard to get money back for investors. They move quickly, they fold quickly. One of the things that always amazes me is no matter what, if you're online and you look at any legitimate newspaper or financial service, within three or four clicks, You can find a penny stock fraud ad. You'll see guarantees of 1,000% or 200% a week, and the criminals are out there. That is a constant fraud. And you know, if anyone's interested in making quick trades, I'd be exceptionally wary of doing it based on something they saw online, especially with such boastful claims.
Well, I think that's one of the major concerns that we see as a consumer group, is that people falling for things that aren't even originating in this country. So many of the scams that come down the pike, and people, unfortunately, really aren't very careful in checking out the sources of information. They want to believe that this investment opportunity is going to happen, that it's going to be great, et cetera, et cetera. And that's just the best way in the world to lose your money.
That's exactly right. I will, if you don't mind, I will say, if anyone has questions about these subjects, we have a call center set up here in Washington, D.C., of staff that can help answer questions about investment, how to do research. That number is 800-732-0330. And you can talk to a real person who will help you do research or explain to you how to do a background check on a broker or an advisor to make sure they're licensed, or any questions about crowdfunding or any of these other bulletins. And, of course, our website, investor.gov, houses all this information.
Okay. So, again, that phone number is 800-732-0330. And Owen promises you can talk to a real person.
That's right.
You're a real person, Owen. I like that. Okay. So really and truly, there are safeguards built in for investors, but common sense has got to be the biggest safeguard and the biggest guideline for consumers. Because when it's promising you so much money, you got to watch out, because that's the best way in the world to lose all that money. Well, what do you see on the horizon? Social media is going to be continue to be a big player in the frauds?
Absolutely. I mean, I think social media is one of the places that we're going to have to watch the most. I also think one of the concerns I have is, given the relatively low interest rate environment, you'll see people what we call chasing yield, and that is, they want to get a higher percentage back because their CDs might not be paying that much, and that makes them a little more susceptible to claims of, "Oh, I'll make you 7% guaranteed, I'll make you 10% guaranteed." So in a low interest rate environment, I think it's conceivable we'll see more pitches. And so I'm always exceptionally aware of when we're in this type of economy that folks want to make a lot of money and understand. But like, it's just like you said, if it sounds too good to be true, it almost always is.
So one of the real guidelines is, if these big promises, especially in an environment where you've got very low interest rates, you're not going to make a lot of money if you're investing in something like that.
That's exactly right. I mean, what I learned from the very beginning of my career in this space is that high rewards come with high risk, and that's not the businesses are built taking risk, and if you're willing to take risk, that's fantastic. But if someone tells you they're going to give you a high reward with no risk or very little risk, you just got to be careful.
Yeah, and I think that's the key word for consumers is, if you think you're going to make a big lot of money out of this with no risk. Good luck with that, is all I can say. Okay, again, Owen, your website is investors.org?
Investor.gov.
Investor.gov.
And that website has information on almost any type of product you want. You can also, if calling our office isn't something you're interested in but have a question, you can submit a question via the website. And if you can go to the top and type in pretty much anything, whether it be crowdfunding or social media, and get access to a lot of – and I'll also say free. For example, the background checks on investment advisors and brokers are absolutely free. It's a service we provide, and I'd strongly advise your listeners – if they're interested in making investments and have any questions, to take advantage of those resources.
Absolutely. And just to let everybody know, you can check and see if there have been complaints or actions taken against brokers. You can find out if they're registered, all kinds of good stuff. Well, Owen, thank you so much. Again, that phone number is 800-732-0330. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest has been Owen Donnelly, who is the Chief Counsel of the Office of Education and Advocacy with the Securities and Exchange Commission. I'm Shirley Rooker. You can reach me at shirley@callforaction.org. Thank you for joining us.
of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.